Professors FM.
Analytics with Mike Lewis, the podcast where we talk about everything you need to know about sports analytics. Here's your host, Mike Lewis, marketing professor at Emory University.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Fanalytics podcast. My name is Mike Lewis. I'm joined by Doug Battle. How are you, Doug?
I'm doing well, Mike. Last week on the podcast, I said the one Georgia player that I love the most as a prospect was Azeez Ojulari. And who drafts him but my New York Giants, my NFL team drafts my college player. The draft can't go any better for a big-time college sports fan. So
we do not have a visual element here, but I want everyone to know that Doug literally wears a Georgia Bulldog jersey to every table.
That is a lie.
He is wearing a hat. That is not. His face is painted.
That is a lie.
And this brings me to, we do not have a, you know, a lot of times there's an underlying theme on the podcast. And the one I was thinking, the word that kept coming to mind today was authenticity. And so, you know, this kind of this truth in spirit. And look, it's a critical thing for fandom, right? That you want to believe in your heroes, you want to believe in your teams. It's it's also kind of a core concept in marketing, right? That you want to believe in a brand. It has to feel authentic. A little bit off topic, I think one of the great, you know, while I'm referencing things to look up on YouTube, one of the great campaigns, marketing campaigns of all time was Grant Hill for Sprite. Are you aware of that campaign, Doug?
I'm not, Mike.
Before your time?
I don't know if I don't know. I know I seem so mature and so much older than I actually am, but I am, in fact, very young. And Grant Hill,
yes.
I don't know if I ever watched him in an NBA game where he was not the old guy on the bench.
Okay, that's completely fair. I think the Grant Hill Sprite campaign was in the 90s, and it's a little bit of a takeoff where he was making fun of marketing, saying that, you know, alluding to the fact that guys like him got big money to promote it. So it was just an example of marketing poking fun at itself in terms of saying, you know, some of this stuff is fake, kind of like leaning into the marketing or the show business aspect of it to appear to actually be more authentic. Now, authenticity sort of came to mind a little bit as I was watching last week we talked about the NFL draft. And the NFL draft was truly something special. And I'm not talking about the draft itself, but the showbiz elements that were around it. What did you think of the draft show? Not so much the draft at this point.
Yeah, well, first off, it was interesting having it outdoors. Weird, what was it, Kings of Leon concert beforehand. They go all out promoting that event and making it feel like a premier event when in fact it's a bit anticlimactic. You've got a group of fans waiting for something to happen. A player gets drafted. They often don't even know who that player is. They celebrate for about 5 minutes pretending to know who that player is, and then they wait for another 4 hours until their team drafts again, if not the next day.
Yeah. I mean, so the Kings of Leon opening up with a musical act, so we don't get to see that Trevor Lawrence is actually selected by the Jaguars, I think, till 8:26, I think is when I wrote down.
Yeah.
But they just kept adding other elements to it. You know, Roger Goodell's chair and a fan that was in costume. So obviously you had to dress in, it was like the old let's make a deal. You had to dress in costume in order to somehow be in one of the team-specific cheering sessions. So I look, you've picked up on the vibe that I love the NFL draft. I love the NBA draft. I found myself this year going, oh, you know, stop it. Stop it. Stop making this a show. This is great content that I love. And now I'm almost waiting for Snoop Dogg to come in and talk about an MFing pick. And I'm looking for like Jake Paul to be, you know, doing a weigh-in. You know, it starts to have that feel to me of this is just pure showbiz. This is WWE. When it's like, no, this is kind of a beautiful event in sports. So, in terms of, let's say, the showbiz aspect, I found it painful.
Yeah, and I think as a fan, the most I don't know, the most difficult part of watching something like that is, like, I'm a Giants fan and I'm a Georgia fan and I'm pulling for the Giants to draft my favorite Georgia player, and they do, which is the best possible outcome, and yet you still have to wait a number of months to even see that player dress out in uniform and play and find out, where they actually going to help the team? Are they actually going to start? Are they going to be a contributor? Are they going to be a Pro Bowler? And so all of the hype and all of the buzz that you're talking about, you know, in regards to having that same feel as a Snoop Dogg commentated Logan Paul fight, is a sense that it's much to do about nothing. Not that it's not important. Clearly, the draft is integral to building a team and winning championships in the long run. But it's just, it's so far out from the actual climax of a sport. And it's, yet it's promoted as if it is the moment, the win. Like, your team can win tonight. It doesn't have that same sensation as a win or a championship.
Okay, well, in terms of the hype and hoopla surrounding the various draft picks, did anything kind of stick out to you? I mean, the other aspect of show business that seemed to come into this was, it also started to feel like this very kind of strange fashion show with ESPN.
Yeah.
In terms of the number 4 pick, and I believe the number 6 pick in particular. So who I don't know. It's like, I think it's well said, this point about, well, the season doesn't start for months. Who had the biggest impact? I mean, who became a kind of a household name on the draft?
Are we talking about players or team?
Players.
Players. You know, I think that Alabama's quarterback, Mac Jones, landing with the New England Patriots got a lot of buzz because there's been comparisons in mock drafts. It's the classic, he's kind of the same height as Tom Brady. He's won a lot of championships. He's kind of not that athletic, but he's good at playing quarterback in college.
Wait, did you see the picture that was going around Twitter?
Yes, yes.
Of Brady without his shirt on?
Yes.
Next to Mac Jones without his shirt?
They both have less than impressive bodies, at least at that age and at that point in their career. And Mac Jones going to the Patriots, I think that storyline of, like, wow, he could be their next. Like, they had Bledsoe, they had Brady, they had Garoppolo, you know, for a short period, but feels like Cam Newton's been the placeholder for a guy like this, and he's got a lot of similarities, at least from a brand perspective, like from his how people perceive him to Tom Brady. And so I think he's a guy that may not have generated a lot of buzz had he gone to the 49ers or to the Dolphins or to any number of teams, but seeing him land with the Patriots, all of a sudden it's like, this guy could become a household name this season, in this situation where, you know, if he's running that offense under that coaching staff, perfect situation for the kid. He's not my favorite quarterback in this class as a prospect, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him have a lot of success, especially early on, relative to some of these other guys who are in a lot tougher situations.
Yeah, it could be the perfect situation is a great way to put that. First class organization that knows how to win, a coach that is clearly incredibly, might not be a, like, I love watching him. Nothing better than a Bill Belichick interview in terms of how he deals with the press.
Oh, absolutely.
But a coach that is clearly very thoughtful in terms of how he's going to operate. And with Cam Newton as the starter, you could almost imagine Mac Jones is going to be given all the time necessary to become acclimated and get used to the nuances of the offense. And could very well be the, I don't think it would surprise anyone if he's the first, if he's, you know, if he plays in the playoffs next year.
Yeah.
And if he, you know, maybe takes the starting reins half a season in and leads the Patriots to being, it's hard for me to get used to this, but let's say 11-6 and, you know, starts to be viewed as the guy that was, you know, almost most ready to play. Where, while Trevor Lawrence coming into Jacksonville? I mean, what's the projection for Lawrence next year in terms of wins?
I have no
idea.
Three,
four, five games?
I can't imagine it being very good. You're looking at a team that went 1-15 this past season. Urban Meyer taking over as head coach. I don't believe he has NFL coaching experience. And so a lot of unknowns in Jacksonville. Certainly a franchise that's struggled for the majority of my lifetime. Look at Zach Wilson going to the Jets, a very similar situation, 2-14 last season. Mm-hmm. And Zach Wilson's got even more unknowns as a prospect, I think, than a guy like Trevor Lawrence because of the level of play, or I guess the quality of competition he played against in college. And then Trey Lance with the 49ers. That's a 6-10 team. So maybe, you know, a little better situation than the Jets and Jaguars. But Trey Lance played at North Dakota State. A lot of unknowns with him. Really was a huge shock to a lot of people that he went third. I think much of the discussion was whether that pick was going to be Mac Jones or Justin Fields. And I think that's a situation where we may have seen some smoke intentionally on behalf of the 49ers organization to throw some teams off. But looking at these quarterback situations, I don't know if anyone's better positioned than Mac Jones. Perhaps Justin Fields going to the Chicago Bears, an 8-8 team that has just lacked a quarterback and been a quarterback away for some time, it seems. So he's another guy. If I honestly, I said this before the draft, I'll say it after. He's the guy that I expect year one to make the biggest impact as a quarterback in this class. And I think he fell into a situation that's somewhat favorable relative to had he, you know, gone first, second, or third overall.
Okay, two quick responses to that. Trey Lance, I think if you look historically, and I'm not gonna pull numbers on this, these kind of one-hit wonders, especially playing inferior competition, he may be great, but he may be, you know, Jamarcus Russell, right? I mean, he may be one of these guys that just He might be a product of too much hope in terms of the evaluation. Justin Fields, you said that the Bears were just a quarterback away. Okay. How long has it been since the Bears had the quarterback they needed to go somewhere? And this is not a fair question since you're not a Chicago guy.
Well, to be fair, Mike, I am old enough to remember the Bears making the Super Bowl with a quarterback who I thought was horrendous in Rex Grossman, but technically he was good enough to get them far enough.
Yeah.
So Super Bowl shuffle years with McMahon, I guess, is the last time. But I don't know some Bears fans that feel like they've never really had a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you could almost argue that Chicago is like a, it's like a quarterback graveyard in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of Bears fans that, you know, it's almost like the comment of Justin, look, and this is I'm being totally unfair here on purpose, that the two biggest problems, the two biggest negative signals for Justin Fields are one, that he lost a quarterback battle to Jake Fromm, and two, that he was selected by the Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
Right? That's the pessimism of that fan base.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, if the Bears had traded up, they traded quite a bit for that pick, by the way, to move up 10 spots. Yeah. A lot of assets. If they had given up those assets and taken Mac Jones, a player who, in my opinion, is more similar to Mitch Trubisky, the previous bust of a quarterback in Chicago, than Justin Fields is, I think Bears fans would have been livid, would have been, you know, rioting in the streets of Chicago. So I was little interested to see if Mac Jones would go with that pick when they traded up, because that would have better continued the tradition of Chicago kind of blowing it at quarterback. And obviously Trubisky over Deshaun Watson and a number of other prospects was the most recent tell in that story, but it has been a saga for the longest time. I think Fields, if I were a Bears fan, my biggest concern would be the fact that, and I wasn't aware of this even last week when we were talking, that he's got epilepsy, or he's struggled with epilepsy throughout his career. And, you know, from a medical standpoint, I'm sure he has to be on some medication that could affect his performance. And I'm sure at any point in his career.
Is that a new diagnosis? I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, this was under wraps, and it kind of came to light right before the draft. So all this time when we were talking, even last week, about, you know, what's causing him to fall, was it the Jake Fromm thing? Was it race related? Is there a problem in the NFL? Is it in regards to race? That was much of the discussion on ESPN. Very little was made of the fact that Justin Fields has an epilepsy diagnosis, and that's certainly a huge concern, you know, for a team that's trying to decide on who their franchise quarterback is going to be. Look at a guy that at any point you feel like could be done with football altogether. So I personally think that the Fields fall had more to do with that than anything else. And it's a high risk, high reward situation for Chicago, where they could end up getting the best quarterback out of this class at the 11th pick. And at the same time, they also could never see Fields on the field, or could see him for a very short time, or he could just not be the player that he would be at full health otherwise. So it's an interesting situation in Chicago, and of course lives up to our expectations when it comes to Justin Fields being in the center of attention at all times as far as media is concerned.
Okay, and so right there, Justin Fields, the center of attention at all times.
Yeah.
I truly, truly remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Being on a Netflix show in high school through all the ups and downs, and mostly ups, but a lot of change and high-profile stories in college. And now he's going to be all over Chicago media in terms of a summer-long debate about whether or not he should be the starter on day one. So he is drafted, and he's like entering a quarterback controversy.
Again.
Do they go with old reliable
Andy Dalton?
Andy Dalton, or do they put him in and let him learn on the go? A further backdrop of the coach and the general manager may have partially mortgaged the future to get him in there. He is probably entering into... He's going to get the most media attention of any of these quarterbacks.
Absolutely,
next year.
I think so.
It's almost like every place this guy goes, the cameras follow him. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I think the only storyline I could have liked more is when the Niners took Trey Lance and the Falcons were on the clock, and I was thinking, and we talked about this last week, this could be interesting. Let's say the Falcons take Justin Fields. A fan base that largely dislikes Justin Fields due to being Georgia fans. And as we all know, Justin Fields left Georgia on, at the very least, questionable terms in the eyes of the fans. You know, are those fans going to hate the pick? Were they going to love it? Were they going to become Fields fans once again? And he also would be in a quarterback controversy with an established quarterback who's had a lot of success in the NFL, Matt Ryan. And that situation, I think, is the only one that could have eaten up more media attention in the coming days. But Justin Fields of Chicago Bears, we're going to be hearing about that situation with Andy Dalton. His health, even, I think, is something to keep an eye on. And his performance in Chicago, a team that, you know, like I said, went 8-8 last year. This is a team that's on the fringe of making the playoffs. Justin Fields is well positioned to have a lot of success early on relative to a player like Trevor Lawrence.
Okay, so the story of the NFL draft was pretty clearly the new group of quarterbacks. First time since, I think it was 1999, that quarterbacks were taken 1, 2, and 3. That was Tim Couch, Donovan McNabb, and Akili Smith, which should throw some cold water on the idea that, you know, the top of the draft has yielded 3 future Hall of Famers.
Right, right.
The draft was also notable for maybe the best quarterback in the game making a lot of news that day.
Aaron Rodgers.
So Aaron Rodgers has pretty much told the Green Bay Packers that he has had enough of them and he would like to move on. He can also retire. He can become a game show host, a pitch man a la Peyton Manning. He's got options and may not be returning to Green Bay. What do you think about Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers?
I mean, this is a guy that going into the offseason, some people thought he might retire. Some people thought he might leave. It appears that he's going to stay in Green Bay for the longest time. And then all of a sudden, the night of the draft, we find out he may be leaving Green Bay. We've seen so often these quarterbacks, these all-time great quarterbacks, leave the team, the franchise they've spent the majority of their career with at a very late point in their career. We saw it a year ago with Tom Brady. Brett Favre in Green Bay is another perfect example that it seemed to be there for an eternity and yet played for, what, three other franchises after leaving Green Bay in a short number of years. Yeah. So I wouldn't be shocked to see something happen here. I do understand Aaron Rodgers' frustrations going back to last year's draft and looking at what happened this last season, how close they were to a Super Bowl, feeling like, you know, if this team had invested fully in me, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, we could have done it. Instead, they started looking ahead to the future and kind of diversifying their investments away from me. And, you know, he wins MVP this year and puts that positions that team to potentially win a Super Bowl. So I can see why, you know, if he's Aaron Rodgers looking at Tom Brady, for example, getting out of a situation like that, going to a team that will fully invest in him, fully build around him, and win a Super Bowl, why not do the same? So, I talked about this last year. I thought the Tom Brady thing would be huge for the NFL in terms of star players dictating the future of the league. We've seen a lot of quarterbacks stay with the team that drafts them for their whole career. In football, unlike in basketball, where a player will play for a team for 4 years and then go to the Lakers almost every time or a team of that nature. So Aaron Rodgers, is he the next Tom Brady in that sense? Is he the next great quarterback to leave the team that drafted him, the team that's built around him for so long, late in his career, in search of one more Super Bowl? I love the storyline.
I think he is.
And yeah, it seems that it would be really difficult to mend that relationship between he and the front office in Green Bay at this point in time.
Well, I think he is, and I also think that in a lot of ways it reminds me of a situation. The Packers organization reminds me of that Bulls organization in the background of that final Michael Jordan year. Right, where Jerry Krause is trying to almost sign EuroLeague players in an effort to rebuild and move on from having one of the greatest players of all. Well, in the case of Jerry Krause, the greatest player of all time. In the case of the Green Bay Packers, one of the greatest players of all time. And it's an interesting story in terms of, you know, not so much a marketing story, but I mean, there's marketing ramifications, but it seems like it's an organizational story, where they've had an elite quarterback and he does not appear to be happy with how he's been treated and the relationship appears to be over. And you got to think with what happened with Brady last year, Rodgers is almost probably eager to move forward and go play in the sunshine. And, you know, so what is the southernmost team that has that is a quarterback away from going to the Super Bowl?
Hey, I can imagine there'd be better places to live and play football as a quarterback than Green Bay, looking at just strictly at the weather situation. Not that wasn't a knock on the fan base. I think they have an amazing fan base up there. But that's a great question, Mike. I don't know. I haven't really thought about where he might land, and just picturing Aaron Rodgers in any other uniform feels so wrong. But so did thinking about Tom Brady in a Bucs uniform a year ago. It felt like something that would happen in Madden, but not in real football, not in real life.
Well, and let me ask the question a different way. What's the trade value of Aaron Rodgers? What would you be willing to give up for a guy with his skill level at age 38?
That is a heck of a question, because he's declining. He's 38 years old. His best years are not.
He won the MVP. He's peaking.
He's peaking. It's like a stock. You're buying it right at the right at the peak. And you know it's at its peak.
I'm 53, Doug. I'm peaking. I'm trying to set a lifetime bench press record this summer. Age is just a no. Yeah, but maybe he's peaking next year. You know what's because you know sometimes when I think about these NFL teams, I can imagine the age is a knock against them. And look, I get it in terms of sports, but what kind of decision horizon should an NFL team have? Should you be looking? Should you even be concerned? Let's say beyond 3 years. Does Rodgers have 3 years in him?
Probably to just be a player, but how many of those years is he going to be at an elite level? I think he's just a guy that, you know, do you want to give up a first-round pick, you know, a player that could be a contributor on your team for the next 10 years for a guy that may win you a Super Bowl next year or the year after that, but isn't likely to contribute for very long? And, you know, I'm reading right now that Dave Gettleman, GM of the Giants, in regards to Aaron Rodgers, said you explore everything, you know, when a player like this is potentially available. And that's a Giants team that's very much invested in a young quarterback and Daniel Jones that still might be willing to explore their options with a player like Rodgers, thinking maybe we could compete for a Super Bowl next year and stop, you know, this long build that we've been in and just go all in the short term. We've seen that work for teams. Of course, Tampa Bay Buccaneers are a great example. We've also seen it fail over the years. I know in switching sports here, the Brooklyn Nets have kind of recently come onto the scene as a big franchise in the NBA. A number of years back, the Nets traded for Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Joe Johnson from the Hawks. They loaded their team with all-stars who were aging, who were in their early 30s, mid-30s, who you knew were kind of in their last couple years of their prime, if not past their prime. And they forfeited their future for that. They traded away all their draft picks for the next 7 years, all their number one picks, to build around these aging stars in hopes of getting a quick championship 1 year, 2 years. Well, what happens, you know, one player gets hurt. You know, those players don't perform as well as you think they might. And now all of a sudden you forfeited your future for what? You know, for a chance at a championship that's already passed. And now you're stuck with these old players on big contracts. So, you know, if you're the Packers or if you're a team that wants to land Aaron Rodgers, you have to be careful to not put yourself in that same situation.
Well, so there's almost, I think there's a couple things going on here. And I think this is also a really good topic for analytics. And that's the dynamics of building a roster and looking at things like salary caps. Because I think you're dead on. Like this idea that, you know, the part of the problem with the Bears is, right, I think they don't have first-round draft picks in the next two drafts. So they're an 8-8 team landing what they think of their quarterback of the future, but they're going to struggle to fill holes going forward during the early years of his career. With Rodgers, right, it's like, do you want to – how much – and so I think that's the good question. How much would you be willing to trade to get a guy – that's going to be maybe an elite quarterback for 3 years? I mean, because, look, I think it's an interesting question. Who's going to win more games over the next 3 years, regardless of where they play, Aaron Rodgers or any of the quarterbacks that were taken in the draft, in the first round of the draft?
Yeah.
But I don't think that anyone's willing to part with any of those elite quarterback prospects for Aaron Rodgers. So there's kind of a funny disconnect, even though, look, out of those five guys, how many of them are actually going to be really great pro quarterbacks? Yeah, two, three, one.
Well, look at a team like the Patriots. Like, if you're the Patriots organization, would you trade Mac Jones right now, straight up, for Aaron Rodgers? Mac Jones, of course, being in his early 20s. Aaron Rodgers being late.
Yes.
You would. Okay, so
yes.
I feel like that might be his trade value. Done. I think it might be a player like Mac Jones.
But I think that has to do with sort of the thoughtfulness of different organizations, right? Organizations that are trying to win but not really leveraging, not really sort of giving up long term in the future. I mean, you know, and look, you can argue, well, Mac Jones has potential for 10 to 15 years, but maybe he doesn't, right? I mean, Sam Darnold was out of New York in 3 or 4. And so it's like this, it's a tough thing. I think it's tough things for people to evaluate kind of the value of this older player versus this younger player. But Super Bowls are such rare commodities, right? MVP quarterback seasons are such rare commodities that, look, Rodgers might be a bargain. He may only have one or two of those left. But, you know, how often do you even have how often have the Chicago Bears had a shot at getting one of those kinds of seasons? Probably not since, I don't even know.
Yeah, and I think back, switching sports again, but the Toronto Raptors a few years back had a chance to acquire Kawhi Leonard. Knew for a fact that he was going to leave after that season, after one season there, because he wanted to play in Los Angeles, and he expressed that when he was on the trade market. They still forfeited one of their best players in franchise history, DeMar DeRozan, in a trade, and a number of other assets to acquire Kawhi Leonard, because they knew this franchise, you know, championships is what we seek. If we can get a championship in this 1 year, that would be worth giving up the next 5 years of being competitive or being mediocre or whatnot, even if we're going to lose Kawhi Leonard. And it worked out for them. So, you know, we've seen both sides of that across sports. Obviously, I mentioned the Nets previously in kind of a opposite situation. The Packers, I think what they need to figure out is, do they really believe in Jordan Love? Because if they do, you know, they can probably get quite a bit of assets in return for Aaron Rodgers and start building around him. But if not, they need to be all in on Aaron Rodgers. And I think the fact that, you know, they've held on to him this long might be telling as to how they feel about Aaron and in regards to Jordan Love, and maybe even some regret in last year's pick. And I don't know. It's an incredibly interesting situation. I would love to see Aaron Rodgers go to a team like the Patriots. I think that would require a three-team trade, which we don't see as often in the NFL. But I can't imagine that the Packers would move on from Rodgers and bring in another quarterback when they just drafted with a first-round pick a different quarterback. So we'll have to see what happens. But this is the NFL storyline to follow this offseason, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's nothing but quarterbacks and nothing but quarterbacks. And maybe this is the harbinger of the NFL starting to look a little bit more like the NBA in terms of being, yes, a star-dominated league. But in the case of the NFL, it's really only one position.
One position.
It is the star quarterback-dominated league. Speaking of another star-dominated league, the star-dominated league, and in fact, you know, oftentimes I find myself wondering, it's like, you know, we talk about how NBA teams are dominated by stars. I think it's also true that that league truly does have a star of stars. It's, you know, they used to have Michael Jordan, and I think that was really healthy for the league. Now, I feel like LeBron James might rank above the commissioner of the NBA in terms of influence and decision making. Did you see LeBron's reaction to the Lakers' current situation and the likelihood that they would have to play in the pre-playoff tournament?
Oh yeah. And Mark Cuban had a similar reaction and on behalf of the Dallas Mavericks. So the trend we're seeing is that teams who would likely be that 7 or 8 seed that will be thrown into this play-in tournament are very much against the idea of the play-in tournament. Obviously, teams that wouldn't originally make, you know, the 9, 10, 11, whatever seeds, love the idea. And so for LeBron, of course, everybody's always analyzing every move he makes. He's under the lens of a microscope. And so people are saying, wow, he's scared of the competition. He doesn't want to have to play Steph Curry and potentially not even make the playoffs. I think for the NBA, that's the most watched game of the year, is a 3-game play-in series with LeBron going up against Steph Curry and the Warriors. I know I'll be tuned in if that ends up being the case. But at the end of the day, the Lakers have had a lot of injuries, so there's a lot of excuses to be made. But they've got to feel like if we're healthy, we can beat anybody. And LeBron communicating the way he has, obviously, is going to be criticized. I think any way he could approach it would be criticized. But perhaps for his legacy, the best move would have been, you know what, we're taking this a day at a time. And if we end up in that situation, we're going to continue doing our best to beat the team that's in front of us and move on to the next round, just like we would in any other playoff series.
Okay, anything else you want to talk about in terms of the NBA? The last story I want to touch on is something I don't fully understand, so I don't want to... It's something that could derail the podcast, so I want to hold it off to the end.
Okay. Well, interesting thing about the NBA to me this year in particular is that if you look at the standings, This isn't the first year this has happened. In fact, it's been quite a few years recently. The teams that lead, particularly in the West, are not often the teams, the sexiest teams, you know, the teams that are projected to win the finals. And often they don't. We saw it, we've seen it with the Denver Nuggets. The Jazz, I know, were leading the league for a while. And now I believe it's the Phoenix Suns, led by Chris Paul, who, by the way, does not get enough credit for the career that he's had and the performance he's had, particularly at this age. But the NBA, it can feel like the regular season is meaningless at times. And we saw that. We've seen it in the past. We saw it last year. The teams that made the finals were not the one seeds in their respective conferences. The Miami Heat weren't even close. This year, you're looking at, a lot of people think the Lakers will be in the finals. And this is a team that may have to be in the playing games to even make the tournament, you know, to make the NBA playoffs. And so how does that affect the NBA? How does, let's say the Lakers end up being the 8 seed and they have to play in and win, or maybe even the 9 seed that's on the outside looking in going into those play-in games to make the NBA Finals. But let's say they win the NBA Finals, and I think that's within the realm of possibility. How does that affect people's view of the regular season? I mean, I'm an NBA fan, and I also, you know, understanding NBA basketball well enough, or I understand NBA basketball well enough to know that as long as your team's going to make the playoffs, it doesn't matter too much if you win, you know, on any given night in the NBA, as long as you're above 500 and, you know, are going to be positioned and healthy come playoff time. I think we've seen teams sit players a ridiculous, you know, percentage of the season for that reason. And I think this year, if we don't see a team like the Suns, see a team like the Jazz in the finals out of the Western Conference, if it does end up being the Lakers, it'll make, especially for those Jazz and Suns fans, it'll just feel like, you know, that was all for nothing. We had a special season, but who cares?
Well, I pulled up the betting odds, and the favorites for the 2021 NBA championship, to win the championship, are the Nets first, the Lakers second, Clippers third, Utah Jazz fourth, and Milwaukee Bucks. And of course, if you go to the Western Conference standings, you've got the Phoenix Suns in the number one position that don't get any love in terms of the Vegas odds.
Right.
So it does. I see what you're saying. It's almost like the regular season has become increasingly meaningless. That it's all about just sort of, it's jockeying for position, but there's also an enormous element of load management and healing injuries and resting aging stars. And look, the NBA was always sort of notorious for not having a great regular season. And now does this make it even worse? And I do think, I mean, the ratings are down a little bit more this year. So is this all kind of adding up?
Awesome. Yeah, and tying this into just all that's happened in the last year as far as the pandemic's concerned, spending a season fighting for position so you can have home court advantage when there's no crowd or when there's 100 people in attendance or even 25% attendance capacity doesn't feel that meaningful. It doesn't feel like it gives you that much of an edge. So I think a team like the Lakers, I don't think they care if they're the 1 seed or the 8 seed because it's essentially, I think it probably feels like a neutral court game for them anyway. Any playoff series, and last year it was a neutral court, and so there's really, the NBA's got to find a way to make the regular season, apart from just making the playoffs without, you know, you essentially have to be a top half of the league, but outside of that, you know, to give some meaning to the rankings, to the standings, as far as you're giving yourself a better shot at winning a championship. I don't necessarily feel like the Suns odds are any better as the 1 seed than they would be if they were the 6 seed.
And now with the play-in game, with the play-in tournament, which was obviously created to eliminate some tanking, the situation has actually gotten worse as they've ticked off their, again, star of stars. So interesting situation. Okay, so let's switch to something that I do not understand. I'm not even going to try and fully understand it. But there is a Marvel tie-in with tonight's game. So for those of when we post this, for yesterday's game between the, who is it? The Golden State The Warriors, Golden State and the Warriors and the Pelicans. So I'm just going to read this. Here's how the Marvel tie-in will work, or according to ESPN. And this is bringing me back to this this word authenticity that I started the episode with.
Yep.
Direct quote, recognizing the superior physical abilities, agility, and tenacity of Earth's greatest athletes, the Avengers will hold a series of contests where the winners earn the right to train and fight alongside them as Marvel's champions. The Avengers will begin their recruitment with the NBA elite and observe the battle between the Warriors and the Pelicans, focusing on three star players from each team. Those players include Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Andrew Wiggins on the Warriors, and the Pelicans' Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, and Lonzo Ball. An alternate player will be selected if any of them aren't able to participate. The NBA stars earn Marvel hero points for every point, rebound, assist, steal, and block, but they don't lose hero points for every missed field goal, free throw, or turnover. Okay, Doug, so explain to me what I just read, because I don't understand. I also know that Captain America drafted Zion. What are they doing? What is this? What is this?
I have no idea.
I'm going to carefully choose my word here. What is this nonsense?
I have no idea. This is the most corny feeling professional sports gimmick I've seen in a while. I don't know how this got approved. I don't know what exactly this will accomplish, other than I know that ESPN is part of the Walt Disney Company and that Disney now owns Marvel and they're mm-hmm. promoting their streaming service, and I guess that, you know, helps them build exposure
again,
for that.
Maybe my comments about Grant Hill seem strange, but the whole Grant Hill Sprite campaign back in the 90s was sort of not really emphasized the point about, you know, not making things too much about marketing, not making the marketing obvious. This seems like this came out of a terrible marketing meeting at the Disney company in terms of this, let's cross promote the Avengers and the NBA. And like I said, I don't get it. Just kind of struck me as, you know, like, are the ESPN talking heads like cringing as they're reading the material related to this?
Yeah. This feels like a complete experiment. It feels like they probably had in a meeting during the summer when there were no fans in the stadium. How can we generate money with basketball without fans in the stadium? What if we used it to promote Marvel or, you know, other Disney properties that are within the Disney Plus streaming service? And there were so many meetings and so much bureaucracy that it took months and months to get this thing into action. And now it's rolling out at a time when basketball feels kind of normal. And this just feels off. Okay.
So from the same article, here's the line. It might help to attract viewers. NBA games on ESPN are averaging roughly 1.2 million viewers this season, down 15% compared to the 2020 averages. So, you know, clearly it's an effort to take a couple of brands, put them together, do the cross promotion, get Marvel fans to watch the NBA, I guess get NBA fans more enthused about future Marvel products. At least for me, it does not resonate. I'm not seeing the upside. So, with that being said, demographically, I am 53 years old, so I am completely irrelevant to these discussions and the goals of these companies. But, you know, it just, as a sports marketing guy, it just seems kind of ill-advised. Okay, Doug, so with that negativity, what else are you what are you looking for in this next week or so of sports? What are you looking for coming up?
Man, I'll tell you, Ted Lasso is the sporting event that I'm looking forward to. I started watching the show on Apple TV, saw the trailer for it, was not sold, and heard some good things, decided to give it a watch, and I am absolutely hooked. Favorite sports show, probably since Friday Night Lights. Very different genre, but man, this show is something. And Mike, I can't wait for you to get on board and eventually do an episode about this one.
Okay, so from my perspective, I'm with you. I'm going to figure out a way to watch Ted Lasso. It's a little bit of a technical challenge, but I've got teenage and college age children that will solve that for me, which again speaks to this new world of media.
Right.
Personally, I think I've got to do some self-reflection. About 2 weeks ago, I was all in on Logan Paul turning all of sports into some sort of strange entertainment festival. This week, I've ended up bashing the NFL for bringing in Kings of Leon and for Marvel doing a crossover with the NBA.
Yeah.
So I've got to resolve these internal inconsistencies.
Careful what you wish for, Mike.
Yeah, part of me loves this movement towards turning everything into this sports marketing extravaganza, but a lot of the implementations are just kind of rough.
Yeah, I agree on
that. So with that, looking forward, like I said, I'm guessing, Doug, we're about 2 weeks out from a Ted Lasso episode. Okay, as always, a lot more at www.fandomanalytics. Thanks for listening. Bye.